Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with David Letterman announcing that he will retire sometime in 2015 after more than 30 years on late night TV. My next guest wrote about Dave. He took his cues from sketch comedy and changed the way late night comedy was performed. Matt Solar-Seitz is a TV critic for New York Magazine and Vulture.com and the editor-in-chief of RogerEbert.com. He's here now to talk about Letterman and his possible successor, and why comedian-hosted talk shows are the formula for late-night television anyway. Hi, Matt. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me back, Brian.
And listeners, if you want to say anything about David Letterman or if you want to help crowdsource nominations for his replacement, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Do you have to be light-skinned and be a male in order to do that job? 212-433-9692. Matt, some of our listeners might see David Letterman as someone their parents watch, or maybe they just watch any good clips they hear about the next day on YouTube. But what were Letterman's comedic innovations to the late night format?
Well, there were a lot of them. One of the big ones was that Letterman was the first mainstream talk show host to kind of make the idea of being on a talk show part of the subject of the talk show itself. And as I said in the piece, I think there's a reason why his first guest was Bill Murray and on NBC, and then when he switched to CBS, his first guest was again Bill Murray, because they had kind of a similar approach to comedy, because Bill Murray was one of these people who managed to stand outside of the movies that he was in at the same time that he was a part of them, which Pauline Kael pointed out when she said he can't even commit to being in Ghostbusters, which he was in. Letterman never entirely committed to being in the show of the show that bore his name, and that was part of what made him such a breath of fresh air.
And here, I think, is an example of that, being in it and out of it at the same time with respect to his network as well as his show. So here's about a minute of David Letterman from 1986 on NBC trying to deliver a basket of fruit to his new bosses at GE after GE had bought the network. As we will hear, it didn't go very well when security wouldn't let him inside.
I'd rather not.
Oh no, come on! You know, we just wanted to come over and say hello. We're going to be working together, and we want to get everything off on the right foot. We have this lovely basket of fruit. So, do you mind if we come? Hi, what is your name?
We received your letter.
Uh huh.
Okay, but we didn't give authorization.
Uh huh. We just can't. You mean we need authorization to drop off a fruit basket?
Yes.
To drop off a fruit basket?
Yes, you need authorization.
Oh, this is going to be fun to work with these people, isn't it? To drop off a fruit basket, you need paperwork.
Excuse me, give me a minute and I'll be right back.
Okay. All right. Just a minute here. And then, what is your name?
Ramos, Orlando Ramos.
And, you know, we're working together now.
That's nice.
How do you like working for GE?
It's good.
Are they nice people?
Good people.
Are they mean to you at all?
Excuse me?
Are they ever mean to you?
No. Good people.
Christmas bonuses?
Good people.
Just let us come in and we'll drop off the basket of fruit.
Okay.
These are the people that we're going to be working with.
Late night Letterman circa 1986 back in the NBC days. I never heard that clip before. That's hysterical. Do you think something like that, if you don't actually know, would have been staged and everybody there was actually, you know, playing a role? Or do you think that was real?
Well, I think it was real to the extent that the reactions of the people he was dealing with were authentic. I mean, none of those people were professional actors, and he was great. He was actually, that was one of the things he has never really gotten the credit for, is although people rightly said that he was never much of an interviewer, in fact, he was kind of an anti-interviewer a lot of the time. When he was dealing with just folks who were not connected to the world of showbiz, he was actually quite wonderful, and his I don't think anybody ever did his Man on the Street interviews better, although he, again, it's so funny, it always comes back to celebrity and the idea of being famous and being on TV. You remember, he used to go out on the street and do those interviews himself, but after a certain point, he he had Larry Bud Melman be his his representative, and you know, he kept finding increasingly elaborate ways to kind of be like Prospero almost, and have other people do the talking for him, even though he was the one doing the talking. It was quite crazy, and we take all of this for granted now. You can't do a talk show anymore and not have aspects of Letterman. He's in everyone's DNA, and there's pre and post Letterman in the world of talk shows.
Right, and yet something like we just listened to wouldn't have happened before. Johnny Carson wouldn't have done that.
No, he wouldn't have. I mean, he did little versions of that. Like, I remember there was a time when Carson, one of his guests broke an ashtray on his desk, and he had the camera follow him out in the hallway. Oh, it was Don Rickles, and he went to find Don Rickles, who was shooting a sitcom in the NBC studios, and confront him about it. But that whole thing obviously was staged. You can't bring a camera crew from one soundstage to the other without security freaking out. But I think Letterman didn't so much. I don't think he wholesale invented every single thing that he did, but he certainly perfected it, and he drew on this tradition of comedy like Ernie Kovacs did in the 50s, where it was almost experimental, where a lot of times the whole point of it was you weren't sure what exactly you were seeing, you weren't sure what was real, what was fake, and what you were supposed to make of it.
Dimitri in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Dimitri.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What you got?
So I wanted to nominate Jon Stewart to take David Letterman's spot. You know, I'm 26 years old, and I grew up with Jon Stewart, and the millennial generation thinks that, you know, he deserves a bigger platform.
Thank you. And Matt Zolastite, TV critic for New York Magazine. Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert both being very prominently mentioned. Could Jon Stewart be Jon Stewart if he took over late night? I mean, would it be The Daily Show, but just on, you know, CBS instead of Comedy Central? Or have you given that any thought?
Well, you know, it's possible. It's possible. I think that Stewart is so powerful. And also, he's sort of connected by corporate family to CBS that he could conceivably do that.
Oh, does the same parent company?
But would he want to?
Same parent company?
Would he want to, though? That's the question. Would there be any reason for him to do it? Just like I hear Ellen DeGeneres being suggested. Ellen DeGeneres would do a magnificent job, and she would break that white guy streak that you alluded to earlier. But why would Ellen want to do that? It would be like a lateral promotion. She's one of the queens of daytime now. That's the issue that you run into, I think.
Margarita in Williamsburg, you're on WNYC. Hi, Margarita.
Hi. I just want to say that I used to like a lot Letterman when he was a Late Late Show in the beginning. But when he occupied the show that Johnny Carson left, he became like a stale for me. Little by little, he became very arrogant. And also, he never had that sympathy that Carson used to have with other comedians. Every time he present a comedian, mainly in the late years, he never was really laughing with the comedian. I didn't like it in the end. I really found him arrogant. Only he was a good in his comments about politicians. He was refreshing and I like it. But he became kind of arrogant. I really am not sorry that he's leaving, because him and John Lennon was already Jay Leno was already for me boring, frankly.
Margarita, thank you. Ben in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ben.
Hey, how are you?
Okay.
Love your show. Listen, I just wanted to say that I'm 41. My mom got me on the show when I was in, I think, first grade when he had a daytime show, and he would do fireworks during the day, which I think speaks to your guest's perfect summation of, like, you don't know what's real. You don't really know what's going on. And I just think he's a master. And just speaking of the last caller, I don't see it so much as arrogance. I just think he's extremely funny, and he's only going to laugh when he thinks it's funny.
Ben, thank you very much. Wait, Robin in Greenwich Village has a Letterman story from when you were an NBC page. Is that right, Robin?
Yes. I didn't even know if you would take this, because it doesn't show Letterman is very nice. He was awful to the pages at NBC Burbank, and when Tom Waits was on the very first time, Mr. Waits, who I'd been talking to backstage, he was so excited about the show. It was his first time. Johnny Carson was the host, but Letterman was taking over him this night.
Mm-hmm.
and Tom was doing Romeo is Bleeding, and he forgot his words, and he said mistakenly a quick obscenity into the microphone.
Oops.
And Freddie DeCordova, who was the producer, wouldn't let him continue, and Letterman had to go along, apparently, with Freddie DeCordova, and we asked Letterman, well, couldn't you let him continue? This is Tom Waits. He's so good. And they said, no, we'll be afraid that he might say that into the microphone. And Tom Waits started crying backstage. I had spoken to him, so he came back. I said, what's the matter? Didn't you do your song? And he said, my parents were out there. My girlfriend was out there. No, they won't let me be on the show because I said this four-letter word, and Letterman was a real wimp in not fighting DeCordova on letting Tom Waits. So ever since then, you'll notice he's really nice to Tom Waits.
All right. Interesting. I don't know if you knew that story, Matt.
I hadn't heard that story, but I doubt at that particular point in Letterman's career that he could have fought the good fight even if he wanted to.
If he was just a fill-in.
If he was filling in for Johnny Carson, I think that would be like taking dad's car out for a 70-mile-per-hour spin when he's not home,
Now, of course, Jon Stewart drops the F-bomb in his script all the time, and they bleep it out, and that's part of the act.
Yeah, it's a different era, Standards have changed.
When you think about Colbert as a possible replacement, and some of the media is reporting that he's the number one candidate, by what evidence, I don't know, but Colbert, is a character. He's not even being himself on his show. He plays a character. So, again, does that mean that the Colbert Report would just be transported to CBS, or he would be Stephen Colbert as Stephen Colbert and do some new kind of thing?
I don't think the Colbert Report would work on a
Please,
regular broadcast.
We must
broadcast
francify
network.
The English language to
Absolutely,
all
yes.
appropriate degrees.
Yeah, I can't imagine that working. I mean, the kind of concerns that NBC had about Letterman replacing Carson, and the reason they didn't give him the job was they thought he was a little too inside baseball. Well, I think having a guy who's I just can't see that. I can see Stephen Colbert being himself, and maybe if he's gotten tired of playing that character and wants to get out while he's ahead, I could certainly see that happening. But, the name that most intrigues me, that actually the only one that really, really excites me, and who knows if we'd want to do it, is Neil Patrick Harris.
Why?
Well, because for a lot of reasons. One is that he's funny. He's charming. He's musically brilliant. He could perform with any of the musical guests, and it wouldn't feel like it was an amateur sitting in. But also, he's smart. He's learned. He's well traveled, and I think there would be not only a kind of a Jimmy Fallon quality to him in that he's a musician, but also a Dick Cavett quality, if you know what I mean. I could see him sort of elevating the IQ of late night without making it seem inaccessible to people who just want to have fun. I would love to see that. But again, who knows? Maybe he's happier doing what he's doing right now.
Tina Fey, Amy Schumer, Chelsea Handler?
All of those people. Chelsea Handler I could see, but again, I think the biggest problem here is who wants a lateral promotion. Tina Fey, I can imagine a million reasons for her to say no, but not very many why she would say yes. And Amy Poehler, same thing. It just seems very constricting. And for some reason, the name that keeps popping into my head, not as a replacement, but as a cautionary tale, is Katie Couric. Katie Couric got to be, she finally got to be the anchor of the evening news. Right. And at a time when that was not such a plum job anymore, she found terribly
But she's not a comedian. I mean, this goes to the question I posed at the outset. We just have 20 seconds left. But why is the comedian-hosted late-night show the format that spread from network to network to network? It used to be Tonight Show doing that. Another network had, I think Channel 2 had movies, and ABC had Nightline.
I think it's the skill set. I think you have to be quick on your feet. You have to have an ability to improvise, and comedians are known for that. If it's not somebody who is officially a comedian, it's got to be somebody who is so funny that they could be one, like an Alec Baldwin.
Matt Zoller-Seitz, TV critic for New York Magazine, Vulture.com, editor-in-chief of RogerEbert.com. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.